making sure planes don't crash because people wanted them to be safe. We don't say all planes matter. And another thing, when a plane crashes, you say something went wrong with the plane, not the passengers. You don't say the passengers must have done something. And you have a black box recording the flight data so we know what happened. We don't let the fucking pilots turn off the black box. Well, we had a black box, but they turned it off before the plane crashed. No, there's one button, record. In America, when something goes wrong, we fix it. We allocated millions of dollars to eradicate the Zika virus. Remember Ebola? Not one person died of Ebola in the continental United States. Not one. But $35 million was allocated by the end of 2014. 850 unarmed people get killed by the police, and we worry about a mosquito? To not work on this problem is to admit that we collectively think that it's actually not a problem. When it comes to black people, most white people would never say this out loud, but they believe this is the way the system was designed to work. It's supposed to be like this. Chapter 5, Do Be an Angel. He looked up at me and had the most intense, aggressive face. The only way I can describe it, it looks like a demon. That's how angry he looked. Darren Wilson's description of Michael Brown. If you have a criminal record, it's okay you got shot. That seems to be the attitude of white people to police violence. It might be a little extreme, overkill if you will, but basically okay. White people think that bad things only happen to bad people. They were good people, and the nice policeman let them off with a warning. See, it pays to be nice. If you got shot by the police, you must have been doing something bad to deserve it. So if you want justice, be sure you're an angel. Police investigations. If you do get shot by police, you better believe there will be an investigation of you anyway. Hope you don't have a criminal record. When the black suspect is shot, the media and their accomplices in the police department will be sure to make that public. Everyone will know that you were no angel. That's apparently justification enough for police brutality, even killing. See, he was a bad dude. You can understand how he might get shot. Bad dudes get what they deserve. So Michael Brown deserved to die because he robbed a convenience store. So Eric Garner deserved to die because he sold illegal cigarettes. So Alton Sterling deserved to die because he'd been previously arrested for domestic battery. With victims of police brutality, they always try to blame the victim as if the victim deserved to die. This shit's been going on forever. In the early 1990s in Detroit, the police beat Malice Green over the head with a flashlight, killing him. At the trial, the police had a coroner testify that Malice died of heart failure because of his prior drug use. Okay, so is his fault he's not strong enough to take an ass whipping? Cops are presumed to be angels. They don't do that with cops, though. Cops are assumed to be heroes. In July 2016, 5 Dallas cops were killed in an attack that had the right yelling Blue Lives Matter as loudly as ever. Killing cops is terrible, of course, but are they all presumed heroes? One of the cops who was killed was described as a gentle giant. Isn't that nice? To be a big, cuddly, gentle giant makes you want to curl up in his lap and get a big fucking hug. It was a little different description than of similarly sized Michael Brown before he was killed. Officer Darren Wilson, the only way I can describe it is I felt like a 5-year-old holding on to Hulk Hogan. In any case, after Officer Lauren Ahrens was killed, he was described as a gentle giant and a family man. Gushing news reports eulogized his fallen hero. And I'm not saying it's right to shoot a cop, but it turns out that this gentle giant was fond of Thor's hammer, the Iron Cross, and a bunch of other white supremacy symbols. A big hero, maybe more like a massive racist, the jolly white nationalist. Did that mean he deserved to be shot? Of course not. But neither did Michael Brown deserve to be shot for shoplifting. It's not relevant. White shooting victims are heroes until proven otherwise. Black shooting victims had better be squeaky clean or people will say they got what they deserved. List of minor offenses and the trumped up charges. Of course, even if you are squeaky clean, they'll find something to make you look bad. Since it's important that a black victim was justifiably killed, here's how it gets twisted after the fact to make it seem okay. Action. Drinking in public. Black shooting victim. Alcoholic. White shooting victim, wine connoisseur. Action, smoking weed. Black shooting victim, drug user. White shooting victim, fair trade entrepreneur. Action, got angry. Black shooting victim, demon. White shooting victim, independent minded. Action, talk back. Black shooting victim, verbally assaulted. White shooting victim, gave a piece of his mind. And of course, even if you don't have a criminal record, that doesn't mean you're out of the woods. Just make sure that no one in your vicinity has done any criminal activity that you could be associated with. Because if they can't find dirt on you, they'll look into your loved one's history. Tamir Rice was an innocent 12-year-old boy, so the Cleveland Plain Dealer looked into his father's history instead. They reported that Tamir's father had a history of violence against women to provide context, or in one Cleveland reporter's words, a frame of reference. Now, what the fuck Tamir's father's record has to do with police shooting him as he played in the park? I don't know. What context does that provide when Tamir was the victim? Here's the context. It's important to make sure that every police shooting look justified. And you'll look like shit, too. If a white person gets shot, you know they run the sweetest picture of the victim from his or her high school yearbook, a picture of them on the beach somewhere. But for black folk, they're not running a nice smiley picture of you. Come on! You know they're running the scariest Negro they can find picture. It's like the black person before and after. Summary. Don't give anyone a reason to shoot you. I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but it helps. If you can't be an angel, at least be a choir boy. And if you can't be a choir boy, at least get your record expunged. If you're perfect, make sure your family and friends are perfect too. Let's meet some sheriffs. Not all cops are just cops. Some are a special category, sheriffs. Sheriffs are like modern-day cowboys, a John Wayne fantasy come to life. White people just love their sheriffs. There's just something about the word sheriff that tickles white people's fancy and makes them feel like they're still living in the old west or something. The tough-talking, horse-riding, cowboy hat-wearing sheriffs are still with us. The original good old boys. The original law and order types that like to kick ass and take names. They seem like they're from another age. One before police reform, civilian oversight, or fair treatment. Sheriffs can dole out justice as they see fit, even if their vision is skewed. Let's saddle up and meet a few of these modern-day cowboys. Sheriff David Clark. A rare black man willing to go on Fox News and toe the line, Sheriff Clark is a tough-talking lawman who white people love. A black cowboy neat. Up until recently, he was the sheriff of Milwaukee County, where he liked to rail against Black Lives Matter, even though at least four people have died in his county jail since 2016. This guy is nutty. In an editorial titled, "This is a War and Black Lives Matter is the Enemy," he wrote, "We as a people need to declare that we stand with the rule of law and not with the false tales of the revolutionary Marxist forces who most recently have rebranded themselves from Occupy Wall Street to Black Lives Matter." What? Luckily, he stepped down to pursue other opportunities. It seemed like one of those opportunities was supposed to be a position with the Trump administration's Homeland Security Department. But now, it seems like that offer ain't happening. Though, who knows, maybe Omarosa's departure provides an opening. Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Sheriff Joe Arpaio, one of the most famous sheriffs around. Sheriff Joe Arpaio was the recipient of a rare preemptive presidential pardon. Why did he need a pardon? Because his form of justice was ignoring court orders to stop violating people's rights. This guy was pardoned by Trump despite some truly despicable behavior. He ran Tent City in Arizona, an outdoor prison facility for people he suspected of being illegal aliens that he himself called a concentration camp. You know you're on the wrong side when you run your own concentration camp. That doesn't go well. He made inmates wear pink underwear and eat green bologna sandwiches, and he got sued. Fox News was full of defenders of the pardon, saying, "What about all those people who've lost their lives to illegal immigrants who shouldn't be here?" Explain to me how one thing relates to the other. How can you defend this behavior? This is a bad guy. Another example, his officers handcuffed a pregnant inmate for suspected ID theft, had the courtesy to uncuff her during an actual C-section delivery, but then slapped the restraints back on as soon as she got to the recovery room. How does a pregnant woman threaten law-abiding citizens? That's what I don't get. A baby is dangerous? This baby might be an alien, but it's not the baby from Alien running around chomping people. I mean, they are aliens, but it's not that baby. I mean, everybody saw Alien, right? That is a fucking scary movie. Who wasn't freaked out by that alien baby? But what was I saying? I don't understand how people who defend Sheriff Joe Arpaio can say, my child was killed by an illegal alien, so I'm gonna make grown men walk around in pink underwear. That's gonna make someone not murder somebody? People will stop trying to come into our country because of the bologna sandwiches? I don't understand the logic. Chapter 6. Don't drive like a suspect. So many police shootings start when somebody gets pulled over by the cops. Philando Castile was pulled over 49 times in 13 years. And yet white people drive all over the place without getting stopped. So how do you avoid being pulled over by the cops? What secrets can we learn from white people? Okay, I know and you know that a lot of the reason black people get pulled over is simply DWB. Driving while black. In state after state, data shows that police officers are more likely to pull over black drivers than white ones. Experts disagree about whether the data shows that cops are racially profiling people or that the cars black people drive look suspicious. I think we understand that cops are racially profiling, but that's a bit harder to fix. So, let's fix our cars. Have a nice car. It seems like half the time black people get pulled over, it is because of a broken taillight. Why? Bad car maintenance is getting people killed. How do you keep a car maintained? Well, sure, have money, that helps a lot. But even if you don't have money, you can do a minimal amount of preventive maintenance to keep your car looking good enough not to get pulled over. Even though it's basically the whitest radio show ever, black people could benefit from listening to Car Talk on NPR. Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers hand out car advice to listeners in the corniest way possible, but heck, they could be lifesavers. Auto maintenance for white people starts with the engine. Auto maintenance for black people starts with the taillight. The cops won't pull you over for a fucked up engine, but they will for a broken taillight. A broken taillight is basically a broken car to you. Other frequent targets for cops, burnout headlights, broken windshields, expired tags, and missing front license plates. If you got a junky car, you'll recognize that list. And look, you know you're really dark when your windows aren't tinted, but they think they are. You've done enough with the dark. Stay away from it. It's important to have a nice car, but maybe not too nice a car. Too nice a car can seem suspicious, so don't go overboard. Drive right. Another reason a lot of black drivers get pulled over is that they don't obey the traffic laws. They improperly switch lanes, for instance, or they're driving too fast, or like in Florida recently when State Attorney Aramis Ayala was pulled over by the Orlando Police Department because she had her tags came back empty and her window tint was just weird or something. So be sure to observe all traffic laws. Be sure to signal if you need to change lanes. Better yet, don't change lanes. Drive straight. Don't turn. Turning can get you in trouble. Everywhere you go has to be straightforward. And so, if you've got to visit somebody and you have to make a left turn, they're off your list. Desperate times call for desperate measures. Straight friends only. Oh, shit. Now I sound homophobic. We can worry about the gays later. Oh, shit, they're here. Well, it's better to be a shot. An angry tweet from Glad, I'll take that over a bullet from a cop. Don't have too many people in your car. Don't have more than 3 people in your car. Yes, there are seats for at least 5 people, even in the smallest car, but if you have too many people in your car, you will attract the attention of the police. There's something about large gatherings of black people that they don't like. Have a white friend. If you're going out, bring along a friend, and if you have a couple of choices, bring along a white guy. A white dude is helpful to vouch for you in case you get pulled over. Carrying around a white guy might even be more important than carrying around your driver's license. You might not want to bring your white friend, but he's like a fire extinguisher. Break seal in case of emergency. Attention, men. Please note that I said bring along a white guy. We're not talking about a white woman. That could put you in a worse situation. And never, ever let these things come together at the same time. Number one, well-dressed. Number two, nice-looking. Number three, black body. Number four, nice car. Number five, white woman. A well-dressed, nice-looking black dude with a nice car and a white woman, that's a problem. You can have two of those five things, maybe three of those five things, but you can't have five of those five things. That's suspicious as fuck. Unless you're an NBA ball player and your team has just won the championship, in which case, all bets are off. But if you aren't one of those three guys in the entire world that's happened to, you're in trouble. It's like those symptoms you look at on WebMD that scare the shit out of you and convince you that you've got a horrible disease. You could have one or two of those symptoms, but if you have all of them, shit, you have lupus. And if I were you, I'd get a cream for that rash, but I digress. Don't be lost. Never be lost. Black people cannot get lost. Always know where you are. Always know where you're going. Getting lost is different for white people. When Christopher Columbus got lost, that motherfucker got America. When black people get lost, somebody dies or goes to jail. If you're black, you've got to be organized. Always know where you're going and what time you left to get there. You want to have your route planned so that you're on the road the shortest amount of time. Get friendly with Google Maps. Remember, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And if you're going straight like I told you, you won't have a problem. And whenever possible, stay on streets named after famous black people, like Martin Luther King Boulevard or Malcolm X Boulevard. Or in a pinch, streets named after Mexicans or whatever. Cesar Chavez Boulevard is still safer than John C. Calhoun Street. And if you see you're on Robert E. Lee Boulevard, get the fuck out. Having trouble with the popo? Are you like me? Always getting pulled over by the police for driving while black and then getting jammed up on some made-up bullshit. Maybe you've tried everything. Crime Stoppers bumper stickers, Police Benevolent Society window decals, being polite, complying with police orders. And you're still having trouble? Even I, D.L. Hughley, can run into trouble. One time, Los Angeles County Sheriff Lee Baca gave me his business card in case I ever got in a jam. I don't think I'll be able to take him up in his offer, since he's in prison for lying to federal officials in a jail corruption scandal. But even if I could, there's no guarantee that he could help before I was arrested for something. Every black person needs a powerful solution. It sounds like we need potpourri. If you want to keep your car fresh, it's good to have air freshener. But get one that'll help you if you get in trouble. White people might want vanilla or autumn breeze or some other Yankee Candle bullshit. Potpourri, that's not for you. You need potpourri. How many times have you been arrested because cops smelled marijuana? How many times does this mysterious smell occur even when there's no weed in the car? Don't give cops a reason to arrest you, or worse, get potpourri. Potpourri is the only air freshener that rids the air of the invisible smell of marijuana that only appears in the police report. Potpourri will set you free. Chapter 7. If you do get shot, don't rush to judgment. What if you or someone else you know does get shot? This book is about not getting shot, but sometimes even a book can't help you avoid the consequences of systematic racism and bias. If you do get shot, white people want to make sure you don't rush to judgment. After all, not all cops are bad. Don't rush to judgment. Nobody wants to rush to judgment. But to black people, if an armed man has shot an unarmed man, then there already has been a rush to judgment. So what the authorities are actually saying is they don't want there to be a rush to judgment on their rush to judgment. Two wrongs don't make a right. If a cop was a little too quick to judge and his judgment was final, that is, fatal, well, that doesn't mean you should be like him, minus the firearm. Two wrongs don't make a right. What did Jesus say? Judge not, lest you be judged. Let he who is without sin cast the first stone, although I wouldn't because that's assault with a deadly weapon and you might get shot doing it. So let's not rush to judge the rush to judge. Let's be patient. Don't judge a book by its cover. Remember how boring you thought Steve Harvey's book was going to be? Bad example. But most of the time, judging a book by its cover is wrong. Every few months, white people trot out a new title in a series called Cops Keep Killing People. Each new release has the latest tragic scene on the cover. It sure seems to be the same book recycled over and over, but please don't form a judgment until you've read all 500 pages. Maybe this time the story will end differently and the cops will be the hero. First impressions are not always correct. That's the essence of being profiled, judging someone on first impressions. So again, you're being asked to do better than the cop who pulled you over for the broken taillight. Don't you go around profiling all cops. Wait for all the facts to come in. Let's wait for all the facts to come in. Why not? There'll be a months-long investigation, so why not wait for all the facts to come in? Then once you have all the facts, you can see if you think there was a good reason for the cops to have shot you. The investigation might include an internal report investigated by other officers. These internal investigations vary from place to place, but the systems are often like those in Ferguson, where the Department of Justice found that police supervisors and leadership do too little to ensure that officers act in accordance with law and policy and rarely respond meaningfully to civilian complaints of officer misconduct. Or they might be like the Cleveland Police Department, where investigators told the Justice Department that they intentionally cast an officer in the best possible light when investigating the officer's use of deadly force. Or it might include a grand jury. Under pressure, prosecutors have started impaneling more special grand juries to investigate police-related deaths. Of course, these grand juries hardly ever indict police officers. Maybe they're still waiting for the facts to come in. A jury of your peers. If you're really lucky, there will be a jury trial like in the 2015 Walter Scott case in South Carolina. He ran away and an officer shot him in the back. That's not an opinion. There was a tape of the officer shooting him as Walter Scott ran away and throwing his taser down near the body to implicate the victim. And then the cop falsified the police report. All that was fully investigated and murder charges were brought. See? The system works. Of course, that first jury still didn't convict him because it's got to be hard to find 12 white people in South Carolina who don't hate black people. Sorry, my mistake. It wasn't an all-white jury. There was one black dude. Still, it's got to be hard. After the state trial, it took the feds to step in before justice was served. And in December 2017, the officer was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison. If we're lucky, a white person will get shot. The bottom line is too few white people have seen a black person killed by the police where they didn't feel in some way they deserved it. There's a presumption of innocence that's given to the police that's almost unexplainable. It doesn't matter what you see or what you hear. All the cop has to do is say, I was afraid. But sometimes, if you're lucky, the police will fuck up and kill a white person. As I write this, just recently, the Minneapolis police killed a white woman. Worse, she was someone's fiance. Even worse still, she was a blonde. And as if that weren't bad enough, she was Australian. We all know how lovable Australians are. That Crocodile Dundee guy was hilarious. The only way Chris Hemsworth could be any cuter is if he was a koala bear. If they're killing white, blonde-haired Australian women, what chance do we have? What if Nicole Kidman is next? Or maybe we do have a chance. Usually, it takes just such a killing to get people focused on why the police are so trigger-happy. It's one thing if a black dude gets shot. Quite another if the cops are shooting blonde ladies from down under. Oh, did I mention she was a yoga instructor? That's just about the least shootable white person you can imagine. If the police are that out of control, who's next? Quilters? Elementary school librarians? Optometrists? Immediately after this one shooting, the Minneapolis police chief resigned and an investigation was started. Maybe a tragic killing that white people can relate to will get them to be serious about reforming the police. But let's not rush to judgment on that. Summary. If you do get shot, don't rush to judgment. If you're black, there's probably a very good reason why you got shot. Don't you rush to judge the one who rushed to judge you. Be patient. Don't judge a book by its racist, oppressive cover. Any police shooting is bound to be investigated, so wait for all the facts to be known and dismissed. In the end, it might be that white people think you deserve to be shot, But if you're lucky, the police will start shooting even the most lovable white people and we'll finally get some reforms. Stuff white people say. Well-meaning white guy number two, body cams. But DL, police departments are trying to reform. Look at how they've started using body cameras in lots of departments. That's good, right? Here's the thing. If there is a police shooting, the authorities never let the public see the video until they've had a chance to review it, which is weird to me because it's our video. It's the public's video, right? Those are our tax dollars at work. There's always a long delay before the police release the video, if they ever do. If the purpose of the body cam is to create transparency, then they should want to show the footage immediately, right then. But they don't. What they want to do is to see it, make a story up, then show it. That's not transparency. They should get the tape, press play, and so the police see it when we see it. That would be transparency. It's the public's video equipment. Instead, we get the video, if we do, after the police have looked at it, edited it, and make sure the story works. In Baltimore, the police didn't even figure out how to do the editing right. They submitted videos showing them planting evidence. You don't put the outtakes in the movie. That's some shitty filmmaking. Are we shooting Police Academy 8 body cams? The police defense is that they were just recreating finding drugs that they didn't get on camera. You know, take two. So that's what we've got now. Police who can plant evidence, cover it up, and claim it was a reenactment. We didn't buy it so the cops could make home movies. Oh, the lighting wasn't right. Do it again. It's not a fucking selfie. Oh, my eyes were closed. It's not for the YouTube channel. Let's do one where I bust down the door from a low angle and then we dolly up into a tight close-up. We ain't making America's saddest home videos here. Baltimore PD, The Wire was canceled. A reenactment. It's hard to believe that this is the same department that killed Freddie Gray while in police custody. Their care in capturing necessary shots for their cinematic opus seem at odds with their lack of care in letting Gray bounce around in their van until he died of a spinal cord injury. Maybe the police forgot to tell us that the van was out scouting locations for their next big feature. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, police shot and killed a woman and then seemed to have edited the body cam footage before uploading it. A former police department records keeper says that this fits a pattern of cover-ups on video footage by the police there. In a lawsuit filed over the shooting death of Mary Hawks, her family alleges that video footage from the police officer who shot her is missing due to a faulty cable, according to the officer who shot her, or incomplete due to editing after the fact. So maybe we just can't trust the police to provide the transparency on this. It could be that police officers are like eager little film majors, Spielberg wannabes, or maybe just D.W. Griffiths. Or maybe it turns out that body cameras are another tool for the same old story we keep seeing. Cops shooting people without cause. These body cam videos are the worst kind of unwanted sequel. Police Department Operations Memorandum. Subject: Body Camera Usage Guide. The police department has issued body cameras to all officers in an effort to increase accountability and help with the training of our officers. The department has issued the following guidelines for body camera use. 1. With limited exceptions, officers are required to activate their body cams when responding to all calls. Limited exceptions include when you forget, when something weird is about to go down, when you might record something incriminating. 2. Officers are required to obtain consent prior to recording interviews with crime victims, except if they are trying to be tricky or if the crime victim is probably lying. 3. Officers may turn cameras off during conversations with witnesses who do not want to be on camera, also if they need to threaten or belittle. 4. Officers must provide written statements explaining their decisions not to record. Just make something up. 5. The department has policies to prevent data tampering, deleting, or copying. But don't worry, we'll only release footage if people get really pissed. 6. Training will be provided to all those being issued a body camera. But you understand that when we say training, we mean not really a lot of training, just enough to make it seem like we give a shit. As a general guideline, if something is about to happen that you don't want people to know about, make sure your camera's off. We can only stonewall for so long. Chapter 8, The Real Way Not to Get Shot by the Police. So you still haven't been shot. That's great. You're already benefiting from the advice of white people. My book is working. Wait a minute. That patting sound, that is me patting myself on the back because I am saving lives. If I can just save one person with this book, then we're going to have shitty sales. I want to save lots of lives. What the heck? You should buy a copy for a friend of yours and save his life too. But you niggas know this shit ain't for real, right? I mean, don't get fucking cocky because this shit is a comedy book. We're trying to have a little comedy with tragedy. But I'm about to tell you the real secret to not getting shot by the police. The only way to not get shot by the police is to be lucky as a motherfucker. That's it. You can listen to this book. You can follow all the advice of well-meaning white folk. You can live a good, safe life. You can do whatever. But the best way to not get shot is to be lucky as a motherfucker. Part 2. How to look. Now that you're not dead, let's keep it that way. Being alive is a good look on you, but it's not good enough. In this part, we're going to get some great advice from white people about how we should look. Yes, believe it or not, we're going to hear some fashion tips from white people. With so many cops scared of black people, it's important to find a way to put them at ease. First, we'll look at how to dress less threatening. And it's very funny when white people claim they don't see color because they are so good at describing us to the police. But is there a way to not match the description? There is, and finally, we'll get some advice about tattoos and how to do your hair Clarence Thomas style. Are you ready to find out how to look? Let's do it! Chapter 9. Don't match the description. Police pull black people over all the time because they match the description. See what a fucking problem that is? I'm here to tell you, whatever you do, don't match the description. Be taller if you have to, shorter if you have to, fatter or skinnier or lighter or darker, longer or shorter hair, whatever you gotta do, just do not look like someone who did something. Look unique. Some people are so unique looking that they never match the description. Have you ever heard of a crime committed by someone who looked like Flavor Flav? If you get shot looking like that, you're shit out of luck. I thought the giant clock was a gun. In other words, if you've been looking to develop some questionable personal style, now's your chance. Wear a lot of crazy crap, it might save your life. You're trying to make sure that there's nobody out there that you might look like. If your style is so whack, you're never going to accidentally match the description. Don't look unique. If you don't want to put in the energy to be totally unique, you can also go the other way. By being totally unremarkable, have no distinguishing marks. Think of a guy you don't remember and be like him. Got it? Nice try. That guy was way too memorable. You remembered him. That's a guy you can remember. You're trying to be the most unremarkable black person you could ever be. You need to go deeper. You want to remember a guy you don't remember. That's the guy. Maybe he's a guy you're not sure you even have ever met. He might not even exist. Think of what he's wearing. It's probably some kind of khaki pants, but who can say? And he's got a shirt on. Maybe a blue shirt. Maybe a tan shirt. It's impossible to know. How tall was he? Average? Glasses? Sometimes. That's your guy. When you're shopping for clothes, be like this guy. You're really looking to pick clothes that anybody would choose. But be careful not to pick clothes that nobody would choose, because those are probably weird clothes. Don't be sketchable. Imagine a police sketch of the perpetrator. They always look like Jason Kidd. Don't look like him. If you do, don't go outside. All police sketches look the same. They all have, one, a bad attitude. Two, the dude's head is a little squat. Three, no forehead. Four, rabbit eyes. Five, goatee. Six, beanie. Now, if you have a short little forehead and like to wear a beanie, you got a problem because you already matched the description. You're too sketchable. Not sketchy, sketchable. Don't look like your yearbook picture. Have you ever noticed that every time a black guy commits a crime, they go back to his yearbook picture? And somehow, he looks just like the kind of guy who would commit the crime he's accused of? He looks just like it. So whatever you do, don't look like you did in high school. Guilty as hell. Maybe Ole Emil should just arrest those people when they go in for their senior picture. As soon as your high school yearbook pictures develop, security arrests you. I didn't do anything. You will. Instead of that autumn leaves background, they give you cinder blocks. They hand you your booking number and make sure they have your profile and fingerprints. In your yearbook, you're most likely to do 10 to 20. Don't let your car match the description. Before the cops even get to looking at you, they're looking for cars that match the description. That's how half these shootings begin. The cops say they have a car that matches the description to some recent crime. Then they pull over someone and they're already on edge. So if you want to be truly safe, you need a safe car. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration safety ratings, that's not for us. Don't go looking at safety ratings. We're not talking about a Volvo. That's a safe car for white people. A safe car for black folks isn't a car that will help you in a crash. A safe car for black people is one that won't match the description. Here's the DL Traffic Safety Administration top safety ratings. 1. An Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. Admittedly, there may not be enough hot dogs to go around for all the black folks who need them. 2. Smart cars. Until criminals get wise to the easy parking and environmental benefits of using a smart car, these cars scream not guilty. Honorable mention, Teslas. White folks figure that if you're conscientious enough to plug your car in at night, you're probably not the folks they're looking for. All cops would have to do to solve a crime would be to follow the extension cord. 3. Golf carts. White-collar criminals drive these, not the kind cops care about. Important note, though they may look similar, ATVs or four-wheelers do not accord the same protection. If you commit a crime in a Wienermobile, you deserve all the time you get. Summary. Don't go getting yourself shot by matching the description. There are so many ways not to look like someone who did something. There's always a guy who's done something, and looking like him makes you more likely to get shot. Remember, look totally unique. Or look just like that guy you can never remember. Remember him? You don't? Perfect! If you love beanies or have a weird shaped head, you know, like LL Cool J, make sure you change it up to be less sketchable. Yearbook pictures can predict the future, so don't look like your guilty looking yearbook picture. Drive a car that doesn't match the description. It might even be a good way to earn a little money on the side. Let's meet Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions is a classic white person whose lengthy service as a senator from the great state of Alabama was capped by an appointment as attorney general under President Trump. With a quintessential southern gentleman, his slow drawl and genteel manner are certainly charming. Sessions was appointed attorney general despite a history of racially insensitive comments. You can understand that any southern gentleman of a certain age would make racial jokes and comments in good fun. Of course, Jeff Sessions denies it. The only black assistant U.S. attorney in Alabama at the time, Thomas Figures, testified that Sessions said the NAACP, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Operation Push, and the National Council of Churches were all un-American organizations, teaching anti-American values, and that Sessions thought those guys, the Ku Klux Klan, were okay until I learned they smoked pot. Although these sorts of jokes got him rejected in 1986 when he was nominated by President Ronald Reagan for federal judge, they weren't enough to derail his confirmation in 2017 as Trump's attorney general. In 1986, these comments and his role in prosecuting voter registration advocates were too much. But not now. White people are back. Jeff Sessions was also a key figure in the Trump campaign. Before most people thought Trump had a chance, Sessions was a big cheerleader for Trump. With the investigation to the Russian hacking scandal underway, he was asked at his confirmation hearing if he'd ever met with Russian government officials. He said he had not. It was only later that his memory was jogged. Oh, did they mean the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak? That kind of Russian official. Well, yes, he had met with them, but only 2 times or so. Now, what can we expect out of his Justice Department? Well, he doesn't think the federal government needs to investigate police departments. The only people who are investigating anything about the police department right now is niggas. They're the only ones. Among his first moves in office was to rescind an Obama-era directive to stop using private prisons. Sessions said the memorandum impair the Bureau's ability to meet the future needs of the federal correctional system. Who you suppose are going to be meeting the needs of these private prisons? Private prisons are morally untenable, but the companies behind them were big donors to the Trump campaign. Many private prisons have an occupancy requirement that means that prisons have to be 80 to 100% full. You can actually bid for inmates, and what you want is young inmates with lengthy sentences that don't get sick. If you can get a cat in at age 20 and he does 25 years, right at about the time he starts becoming a medical problem, you get rid of him. That way you keep your profits up. That's the stuff that Jeff Sessions fights for, making sure we keep police doing whatever the fuck they want and making sure there's plenty of space to lock niggas up. Likes mint juleps, private prisons, and said, I say before everything. Dislikes testifying under oath and remembering things. Chapter 10, How to Dress Less Threatening. If you dress like a thug, people would treat you like a thug. Geraldo Rivera talking about the death of Trayvon Martin. Dressing the wrong way can be dangerous. Just being out at night in a hoodie was enough to make Trayvon Martin a threat. White people don't get how black people dress, and sometimes it gets us killed. And white people can wear anything they want, and it's fine. Is there a way to take a page from the white book and dress less threatening? Don't dress like a thug. Let's face it, black style has always been dangerous, from zoot suits to MC Hammer's parachute pants. White people clutch their pearls and worry about black fashion. They see it as foreign and, well, scary. Almost everything looks better on a black guy, but also more threatening. You can't help it, but being fly could make you die. Have you ever felt threatened by the way white people dress? Even if you see a white guy in some kind of Ed Hardy skull t-shirt, it's hard to take them seriously. White people have perfected the art of non-threatening dress. It's called Banana Republic. If you want to look totally non-threatening, all you have to do is buy everything at the Banana Republic, or better yet, call up Lands' End and say, I'll take one of everything. Fox News is always talking about black men looking like thugs. Do-rags, sagging pants, and especially hoodies are fashion no-nos according to Fox. Wearing that sort of thing means you're advertising yourself to be a criminal. Obviously, it's wrong to say that every black man wearing a hoodie is a thug. If I tried to tell you that every old white dude in khaki pants and a golf shirt is a racist, you wouldn't buy that argument. But the point is, you can't really tell that much from how somebody dresses. There are probably as many black dudes dressed as thugs who are thugs as white people who are dressed like white supremacists who are white supremacists. But it's okay to dress one way and not the other. But what am I trying to do here? Tell you how to dress with style the way I do? No, I'm trying to keep you safe and explain how to dress the way white people like it. So, no do-rags, try a cowboy hat or a derby instead. No sagging pants. White people hate sagging pants, which is weird because they don't have butts. They should like sagging pants. No hoodies unless you follow the following guidelines. How to wear a hoodie. Hoodies are a popular and casual clothing item enjoyed by millions of Americans, from grandmas getting in their steps at the mall to young hipsters banging out some code in a Williamsburg cafe. Hoodies are enjoyed by a variety of white people and also some black people. But did you know that black people are wearing them wrong? Crazy, right? Wouldn't it be great to get a little white advice on how to wear them correctly? After all, white people have decades of experience with wearing hoods. Number one. Hoods are decorative only. Even black people can catch a chill sometimes, so it would be tempting to view the hoods on hoodies as a hat that you could put up to keep your head warm. But that would be a mistake. A hoodie put on top of your head makes it nearly impossible to tell if someone is black until their face is in view. That leads to a temporary disconnect. How can white people know how to treat you if they can't figure out if you're black? Two, never wear headphones under your hoodie. Let's say a white person just has a feeling that you might be black. And naturally, then they might want to ask you what you're up to or why you're in the neighborhood you're in. How will you know what that white person is asking you if you can't hear them? It's probably pretty important, so you want to give this white person your full attention. Also, if white people are yelling at you, but you don't understand because you have headphones on, how will you know why they're upset with you? White people have short fuses and don't like to be ignored. Three, hoodies are not evening wear. Fashion has weird rules. Why are suit pants so short this season? Why isn't it okay to wear white after Labor Day when white people obviously love white things? Who can say? There's something about hoodies and black people that just makes them more suitable to daytime wear. And there's something about being out at night in a hoodie that lends itself to getting shot. So let's just say wearing hoodies at night is out of style for black people. How to dress white. If you want to be safe, if you want to dress the white, I mean right way, try out some popular white outfits. Khakis and a nice button-down shirt. Corduroy jacket with elbow patches, and heck, let's throw in a pipe and a fireplace too. Argyles. But fashion is a cruel mistress. Remember how everybody lost their minds when Obama wore a tan suit? You don't want to get it wrong and end up making things worse. So what the fuck are black people supposed to wear? What article of clothing makes black people less threatening? What shop do we go to? They have a little folk shop for small people. They have big and tall for big people. They have Lane Bryant for bigger women, right? What do we have? We don't have a less threatening nigga store. Until now. LTNS, the less threatening nigga store. You don't have to sacrifice your street cred to look great at the LTNS. Here, we've taken street fashions and transformed them into the kind of clothes that will put white people at ease. At the LTNS, we're dedicated to making America look great again. Chapter 11, Don't Have Gang Tattoos. White people's heads are always getting filled with nonsense about gangbangers, so beware, all tattoos, no matter what, will be perceived as gang tattoos. It's okay for white people to get tattoos of a skull, some weird Celtic symbol, or an arm sleeve that means have a great day in Welsh or Sanskrit or whatever. But just know that the same tattoos on a black person will invariably mean I'm in a gang. So, if you want to have tattoos, make sure that they are as innocuous as possible. Try to get the ones that are butterflies or smurfs or that clearly say mom. Even then, white people might be prone to seeing your tattoos as threatening. Tattoos and the way white people see them. Tattoos. Tattoo of mom in a heart. The gang tattoo white people see. Tattoo of a fist with black power. Tattoo of Calvin and Hobbes peeing. The gang tattoo white people see, tattoo of Calvin peeing on a cop. Tattoo of a happy face. The gang tattoo white people see, tattoo of a skull. Tattoo of Simone. The gang tattoo white people see, tattoo of Crips and Bloods. Remember, racism is toast. White people wish racism would just go away so they wouldn't have to deal with it. Here's the problem. We don't get rid of racism when we cover shit up. You have to acknowledge it, look at it, and deal with it. It's like when your mother used to burn your toast and you still had to eat it. You just scrape the black stuff off and it's fine. The rest is still good. No, it ain't. No kid wants to eat that burnt toast. You can't just scrape off the most obvious racism and say the rest is good toast. Throw that shit out. It's time for a fresh slice. Chapter 12, How to Do Your Hair. What kind of haircuts do white people like? Well, let's look at who they put in charge. Vice President Mike Pence has perfectly respectable hair. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin has standard-issue middle-aged white guy hair. Didn't we already do Mike Pence? Oh, shit. That's Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. Sorry, all these white guys look the same. Short hair is the preferred choice for white dudes with a part on the side. That's the way white people like their hair. Of course, white people will sometimes overlook a weird haircut for tax cuts. Sure, Trump's hair is terrible, but his views and policies are worse. I don't think that even the most rabid conservative would say they love Trump's haircut. They love him for his demented Archie Bunker attitude. Steve Bannon looks like a crazed drifter, but he's their crazed drifter. White hair is no fun. You're just not going to see a lot of variety with white hair. Ever since the Beatles grew their hair out an extra inch, long hair on white dudes has only been for hippies, rock stars, and burnouts. The problem with black hair is that it's confusing for white people. That's why people are always asking to touch it. They don't get it. Don't believe me? Up until recently, the Transportation Security Administration was able to take a black woman and search her hair because it seemed different to the TSA officers. Malika Singleton, a black female neuroscientist, filed suit because her sister locks were given hair pat-downs that white passengers were not subjected to. The American Civil Liberties Union was able to get the TSA to change their procedures so they don't waste time with this hair threat. I mean, the Islamic State is not known for its weaves. Different hair has been subjected to harassment and unfair treatment, especially for black women. In the army, black women have been told they have to wear their hair in specific hairstyles. The New York Times interviewed Captain Danielle N. Roach, who used chemicals to keep her hair straightened so she didn't run afoul of the regulations. These treatments cost her up to $80 every 4 to 8 weeks. Luckily, the Army has recently changed its policy to allow for female soldiers to wear dreadlocks slash locks. At schools, girls' natural hair has been deemed a problem, and they've been penalized with threats of expulsion, like in the case of Vanessa Van Dyke of Florida. Her school taught her to cut or straighten her hair, calling it a distraction, and yet nothing is done about white people and their mullets. It's crazy. How long can my hair be? For black men, the longer the hair is, the scarier it is. But then again, if you're bald, that's scary too. You have to find the perfect non-threatening length and style. Dreadlocks, scary. Braids, very scary. Afro, very, very scary. The half-ro is probably the perfect style. Like James Brown on the NFL Network or Ben Carson. It's not really cut short. It's not really cut long. It's in the middle. It makes no statement. Perfect for disarming white people. What cut should I get? When you go to the barbershop, pick a safe hairstyle. Just ask for the cut you want by name. Summary. White people like black people to have their hair as boring as theirs. If you want to stay safe, play it safe. Look at old white guys. That's the hair you want. Ben Carson isn't just a genius surgeon and a weirdo. He has great hair. If you're having trouble deciding on a white-approved hairstyle, why not try short or very short? Anecdote. Wigs. A little bit ago, Bill O'Reilly was making fun of Representative Maxine Waters because of her wig. Before he got shit-canned from Fox for harassing women, he was on Fox and Friends saying that he didn't hear a word Waters said. I was looking at the James Brown wig. Bill O'Reilly doesn't understand the importance of wigs. Growing up, every black woman I knew, loved, and respected had a wig. Matter of fact, the wig was an early warning system. If you came home and the wig was home, your mama was home. But if you came home and the good wig was gone, that meant your mama was going to be gone a long time. She was going to take care of business. Where you going, mama? Don't worry about where I'm going. Just turn the beans off in 30 minutes and watch your brother. When she put on that good wig, your mama was either going to church or downtown to talk to white people. These motherfuckers done cut my gas off. If she wore the good wig, you knew you could play all day because she was gonna be gone. When she had that wig on, she was going to kick some ass. So, Bill, you are lucky Maxine Waters didn't have her good wig on. If she did, she might be coming for you. Part 3. How to act. Now that we know a bit more about how cops think and we're looking less threatening and dressing whiter, let's put all the pieces together. It's all fine and good to look the part, but now we have to act the part as well. In general, you want to stay away from the words erratic or suspicious. Erratic white people are whimsical. They get sitcoms made about them. Erratic black people get shot. In this section, we'll find out what kind of music to listen to, how to talk, get a job, and more. Maybe you've been wondering whether it's okay to say the N-word or what to name your kids. Don't worry. I've gathered a lot of great advice from white people on these very subjects. Are you ready to put it all together and learn how to act? Let's get at it. Chapter 13. How to be nice and quiet. White people think black people are loud. They like black people to be nice and quiet. Let's face it. Black people are loud, and white people are loud. But loud white people don't have a problem. Loud black people get the cops called on them. Loud black people get Michael Dunn shooting at them for playing their music. So let's take some white advice on this and be nice and quiet like they want us to be. Be like a child. It's just like my mother used to say, children are supposed to be seen and not heard, and maybe not even seen. Sometimes grown-ups have shit they want to do. They have adult conversations, they have adult stuff to do, and they don't need kids around to fuck it up by talking or getting involved. It's the same for black folks. White folks are grown-ups, they got shit to talk about and stuff to do, and they want black people to be nice and quiet. This goes for pretty much any public place where there might be white people. A restaurant, airport, mall, movie theater, etc. Let's start acting like children, like white people treat us. Study your ancestors. We need to study our lineage. At one point, black people had mastered the art of being invisible to white people. How did they do it without being noticed? Sure, slavery is a dark part of our history, but that doesn't mean it was all bad. Look at the silver lining. Black folks sure got good at being nice and quiet. True, it was under duress, but in the nice and quiet department, we did a great job. Without the beatings, the forced labor, the ripping apart of families, and the lynchings, can we still be nice and quiet like white people want? Pretend you don't exist. Pretend like you don't exist, like the government does. They don't count us in the correct numbers in the census or voting rolls. They don't fund housing subsidies, after-school programs for black youth, SNAP. So in a way, you're just doing what the government wants. The Revolutionary War was fought over taxation without representation, so stop representing. When I was in school, I never wanted to be called on. I sat in the back of the class, and I could turn myself invisible. Not because I had some kind of superpower. I just found a way to be out of the teacher's eyesight. Just out of her line of sight. She turned one way, I'd shift and duck the other. She turned the other way, I'd slouch and hide. But the main thing was mental. I didn't want to be seen. There's a way not to be seen if you don't want to be. What good has ever come from being noticed by white people? So, start wanting to not be seen. Turn invisible. Summary. Be nice and quiet just like white people want. They like for us to be seen and not heard, or at least not heard if seen. Remember, it can be hard to be quiet. You have to want it, like when you're in school hoping not to get called on. Be quiet, but not sneaky quiet like you're planning something. If you're too deep in thought, it might look like you're plotting a revolt. Or think of yourself as a child, trying to avoid getting yelled at by a belligerent parent with a hair trigger and a history of violence, like white people. Think back to Harriet Tubman and others who mastered the art of being invisible on the Underground Railroad. Black folks of that generation had a motivation. They didn't want to get beaten or killed. Times haven't changed that much. Chapter 14. What kind of music should you listen to? Music is such an individual decision. Does it even make sense to say there's a right music to listen to? Yes, yes it does. What kind of music do white people like? That's the right music to listen to. White people enjoy Dave Matthews Band, U2, Journey, that Proud to Be an American song. Honestly, all that shit sounds the same to me. Though, every black person can sing I Wanna Know What Love Is, even if they're not sure if it's Foreigner or Journey. The point is, you have to play not scary sounding music, like Conway Twitty. The name just sounds safe. And even though Ted Nugent is scary, he doesn't sound scary. Be careful of music that sounds scary, like T-Pain. That sounds like it hurts. Fetty Wap. Who's whopping Fetty? Violent. Wiz Khalifa? Khalifa sounds like an ISIS commander. And Wiz, well, white people remember when Diana Ross and Michael Jackson ruined The Wizard of Oz. They were not off to see the Wiz. The flip side is, you should feel free to play white bands that truly sound crazy as hell. Yes, somehow, the Sex Pistols, Buzzcocks, Black Sabbath, Marilyn Manson, Beastie Boys, Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax, and Grateful Dead are all perfectly fine. I didn't create the rules, I'm just explaining them. Sure, there's some good music you can play for yourself when you know no one else is around. But it's smart to have some songs queued up for you to play just for when you pull over. Cops know that if they hear some types of music, nothing can go wrong. A preset classical station is a good idea. Or country music. No one ever gets shot listening to... Scratch that. Why not put together a don't shoot playlist, like songs by the Police? Is that the Police? It is, officer. That's my favorite band, though I don't like Sting much. Me neither. Have a good day. You're free to go. But stay vigilant. In your rush to change artists, you must be careful not to confuse safe and dangerous music. Here's a quick list of commonly confused acts. Safe. Young Neil. Dangerous. Young Thug. Safe. Roots music. Dangerous. The Roots. Safe. Spice Girls. Dangerous. Salt and Pepper. Safe Vanilla Ice. Dangerous Ice Cube. Safe Alabama. Dangerous Flo Rida. Safe Timberlake Justin. Dangerous Timberland. Listen to it quietly. You want to make sure your music is quiet.